Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. Streaming live at richarddugan.com. We also archive these programs. I'm actually being told I need to change that term to, we have podcasts. Yes, we have podcasts at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. We also link to our guests' website. We'll be giving you that website address in just a little bit so that you can continue to investigate and research and follow up on the information that has been talked about in this interview. Today is, I think, going to be a very interesting program. It's a little different from the standpoint. It's a little more practical, a little more material, more down to earth, so to speak. We're going to discover 25 proven strategies to accelerate innovation and transform results. That's sort of the subtitle of the book, The Anticipatory Organization: Turn Disruption and Change into Opportunity and Advantage, which brings me to an interesting book I was asked to read. Actually, it was made mandatory by our general manager way back in the 80s. It was a book called Who Moved the Cheese? And I read the book. I didn't really resist so much because it wasn't that big of a book. But I read the book, and when I was done, I went to my boss and I said, look, I don't have a problem with somebody moving the cheese, okay? Just tell me. I just want to know that it's being moved. That's all I ask. If you want to move it, move it. Just tell me you're moving it. And you don't even have to tell me why. It's none of my business, even if it does affect me. Well, I think we'll talk a little bit about that with our guest, the author, Daniel Barris. He is on Skype today, and I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. I think we're going to have quite a bit of fun with this one, you being a best-selling author as well. Thank you for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
You know, it's one of those things where I don't know if it's because of or in spite of technology that a lot of this stuff is really kind of hitting the fan now, because we're facing changes. We're facing all kinds of different disruptions for a lot of different reasons. I know that I could tell you stories of power outages here at the radio station, maybe sometimes even when I'm in the middle of an interview, technological interruptions where, oh, there's an update for the program that you're using right now. Would you like to update? It's like, go away. I don't want to deal with that. Hackers who are hacking into computers when we're driving. I mean, again, we have a plethora of reasons why we're challenged by and struggling with trying to do the work that we want to do. And a lot of us have found, so to speak, our life's purpose. And then all of a sudden, there are these obstacles in the way to being able to do it and enjoy it and have a good time with it. Is that an assessment of sort of your book being the answer to that or the solution?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, even though the book is called The Anticipatory Organization, it is indeed for individuals. Because either you're anticipatory or you're reactionary. Either you're putting out fires and crisis managing your life, or you've learned how to be an opportunity manager, creating change from the inside out, rather than just responding from change hitting you from the outside in. And so the book itself, again, I called it Anticipatory Organization, because if you're the only person in an organization, regardless of whether it's a church group or a Fortune 500 company, who is anticipatory, and everyone else is reactionary, you're going to be an unhappy camper. So I would like us to create organizations that can find certainty in an uncertain world. And I think that is one of the keys to the book, is how much we can actually be certain about. And to address what you just said, Richard, and that is problems that we face, I think you're going to like this one. I'll get right to it. And that is one of the 25 strategies that I share in the book to be anticipatory, is take your biggest problem and skip it. Because you just talked about these you just talked about all these challenges in our way.
Yeah.
So I think it's actually one of my favorites, and I use it all the time. And I think you know, I've started 6 companies over the years. 5 were profitable in the first year. 4 of them were national leaders. I've never had a business loan. And I think the way I've been able to do that is problem skipping and being anticipatory.
So wouldn't that be viewed as procrastination of a sort?
No, it's the app. You know what? That's a great insight. No, it's not, because here's what I'm getting at. There's two elements to problem skipping. So let's get into this a minute. One is, whatever problem you've got, and I'm talking to your listeners right now, whatever problem you've got, that's not it. Hey, you're smart. You would have solved it by now. You're working on the wrong one. Mm-hmm. So in the book, I talk about how to peel the onion back to get to the actual real problem, which is actually fully solvable. Let me give you a simple, very quick example that just happened with my young niece. She's got her first job. She's out there in the workplace. And she called me a few weeks ago and said, Uncle Dan, I'm having trouble saving money. I'm working really hard at saving money, but it just doesn't seem to work. And by the way, she's got an older sister that can save money like crazy, so she knows it's possible. But she can't solve that problem. And I said, well, the reason you're having trouble is you're working on the wrong problem. You're trying to figure out how to save money. The problem is you don't know how to spend money. So if you work at how you spend your money, you'll find it better. You'll end up saving money by default. You see, she was working on the wrong one.
Oh, so okay.
Most of us, by the way, if any listeners think money is their problem, that's why money continues to be your problem. You're working on the wrong problem. It's something else. You've got to peel the onion back, which I teach readers how to do in the book so that you can find the real one. Secondly, the second part of problem skipping is you could probably skip it altogether. For example, most of us think if we're going to start a money, we need somebody to, if we're going to start a company, we would need somebody to give us money. We might have to go on Shark Tank or something. But no, you don't have to do that at all. And let me give you a specific example using right out of the book, one of the strategies. The book talks about three classifications of future facts. These are certainties you can count on. That's how the subtitle of the book, Turning Disruption and Change into Opportunity and Advantage, works. You can actually see so much of the future and know it will happen. It's amazing. And one of them, out of the three hard trends, I call them, is government regulations. And that would probably surprise you the most. How could you get certainty out of that? But let me give you a specific example so our listeners understand. In California, there's 1,000 new laws that were passed in January this year. One of the laws said that in the state of California, within 3 years, this is a real law, all kindergartners and first graders reading material, half of it has to be nonfiction. And by the way, right now it's all fiction. The little engine that could is fiction. And when you hear things like that, you say, well, why would they do that? And you get all upset and you think it's a stupid regulation. But I met a 28-year-old school teacher in San Diego that did the opposite, which is another principle that I teach. Instead of looking at what she didn't like, she said, hey, this is a law. It's a certainty. This is going to happen. Is there an opportunity? So she made three phone calls. She called the San Diego School District, the Los Angeles School District, and she called the San Francisco School District. And she said, this law is in the books. You got 3 years to get half the books for those kindergartners and first graders to be nonfiction. If I provided those books, would you be interested? And they said, yes, we didn't know how we were going to do that. To make a long story short, they underwrote her business and guaranteed her a market. She didn't have to go on Shark Tank, and she's got a thriving business because she was looking at what do we know about the future? What are the opportunities that might seem invisible? Is there a way to make them visible? And in my book, I show you how to do that. As a matter of fact, for your show today, Richard, you know what I did? I'm gonna give every one of your listeners a free hardcover copy of this book. I'm launching it right now. You could go on Amazon and buy it if you want, but I'm doing something better. I'm going to give it to you. If your listeners go into the internet and go to theaobook.com, they can get the book for free. All they got to do is pay a small shipping charge, and it'll be FedEx directly to you. And I can tell you right now, I'm actually losing money on every book that goes out because I'm giving it to you. But the reason I'm doing it is I want us to learn how to predict problems before they happen and solve them so you don't have them in the first place.
Yeah.
I want you to see the changes coming before they affect you so that you can turn that change into a personal opportunity. And I'm so passionate about it, I'm going to give you the book.
You know, I find this fascinating because in my world, in the nearly 40 years that I have been doing this and working with computers that came into vogue in like 94, 95, 96 into radio and automation and all the production and editing. And one of the biggest lessons that I learned as I moved through and dealt with the frustrations of whatever came up, there was always, and I can say this with almost 100% certainty, 99.9% certainty, there is always a workaround. It depends upon how long you're willing to search for it. You're trying to accomplish something, and normally you go from point A to point B. Great. It would be wonderful if every single time I could do that. But as I used some of those examples earlier in the program here, sometimes you got to go to C, D, E, F, G, H, I, all the way down to Z before you can get to B. And it might take a little longer, but this has been my philosophy.
Well, you're right. You're right. You can do that.
Yeah. It's the goal that you want to achieve, not how you achieve it. And when I trained people, when I would train people on the console to do the work that I do, for example, in terms of producing radio shows, I tell them, I'm going to show you how I do it, okay? And then I'm going to ask you to sort of mimic that. I want you to do it. But then I want you to find a way that works best for you, because it is not, the goal is not to do it my way. The goal is to achieve a quality broadcast and make sure that everything sounds good and so forth. So however you achieve that, I'm all for your innovation in that respect. And I seem to see what's happening both locally as well as nationally, and even, I don't know if it's so much international, because I find, and I don't know if you've observed this, Daniel, it seems as though Americans and America at large has this attitude that even if another country's people came up with a wonderful, viable solution to a given problem, we say, no, we'll find it on our own. We're Americans, and we that's what we do. We do it on our own instead of learning from other people.
Well, to speak to that, and I do work all around the world, and again, I've been doing this for over 35 years, and what I think it is that our ego can get in the way at some point, whether it is a national ego or a personal ego. And the way I look at it, and again, I've been successful with in both in business and in education, and I think the way I've done it is, you know what, I'm looking for the best ideas that'll get me there faster. And frankly, if a custodian has the best idea, I'm happy to use it. I don't care where it's coming from. I just want ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I do in the book in terms of getting to those good ideas faster, because as you said, sometimes to get to C, D, E, F, and G, it takes time. I've got some techniques in the book that help you to find the best possible solution in the shortest amount of time. And again, I'm so excited about it. That's why I'm giving people a copy of the book.
And we'll give out that website, too. I have a quick question for you, though, in light of what you just said. Okay. Is faster necessarily always better?
Well, no. And that's a great question. actually, what I would like us personally to do, as well as organizationally, is it's not about speed. Instead, it's about strategic velocity. And this can be applied to a person or an organization. Here's what I mean by that. I was on a jet flying cross country just a few days ago, and the pilot was not going full throttle, full speed the entire way, as fast as he could.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, that would have been stupid. What he found was a strategic velocity that got him there with the in the safest possible way, with burning the correct amount of fuel, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not about burning you or your people out pedal to the metal. It is about moving quickly, but with intent and with a future direction. Again, being anticipatory is about looking at what are the problems ahead that you can clearly see so that you can solve them and not have them in the first place. I like that idea. And it's very powerful to do that. And then, because I know every one of our listeners has said to themselves, I knew that was going to happen. And I would say, well, then why did you let it?
Yeah.
And then there's hindsight. People saying, well, I should have bought Apple stock about 10 years ago, or I should have bought Facebook when it first went public. And you know what? You can't change the past. You can learn from it, but you can't change it. However, you can change your future based on the actions you take today. And that's why I wrote this book, because we are actually, and you kind of alluded to this, let me bring it out, and that is we're at a unique point in all of human history. The world's fastest supercomputer 4 years ago was disassembled 2 months ago because it was already obsolete. Hmm. And we're doing things today that were impossible just 2 years ago. And by the way, we'll be doing things 2 years from now, which are impossible today. So what I would say to all of our listeners is, how would you like to know what those things are ahead of time? And there is a way to do that. That's why in the first part of the book, I call it Know What's Next. Learning how to separate the hard trends that will happen, guaranteed, fully, mm-hmm. from the soft trends that might happen.
Okay.
And when you do that, you have certainty in an uncertain world.
All right. Now, you helped to raise a particular point that I have been utterly frustrated with every time I hear economic news. And it doesn't matter what the news is, okay? If the news out is that the numbers are down, every economist that comes on talks about how terrible this is, okay? If the news comes out that the numbers are up, they aren't up high enough. So the economists that they talk to still aren't happy. So I only have one question for all these economists, all these people that are not happy when they're down and they're not happy when they're up, is what numbers would make you happy that would shut you up and allow us to enjoy the fruits of our labor at this particular moment, instead of complaining that, oh my gosh, they're going down, or, oh, they're not going up fast. It's like I keep hearing about growth in this country and how it's you know, whether it's stagnant or it's slow. And every time I hear this, I talk to people, I say, well, wait a minute. How would you feel if nature took that same attitude and said, you know what, we're going to grow these trees really fast? The people I've spoken with, horticulturists and people who are knowledgeable about these things, say, if a tree grows fast, and there are some trees that just naturally do, they're very fast growers, they do not establish a firm, deep root system that will help them to withstand the weather above ground that will allow that tree to continue to stand. An oak tree, for example, we have lots of them all over California. Here in our here where I live, on the property where I live, we've got a number of oak trees that are all very stable, and we get some pretty hefty winds up there sometimes. And they just, the leaves just blow around, and the branches, you know, move, creak a little bit. The tree stays there, and some of these trees are gnarly looking. I mean, the branches, obviously, that's because they're adjusting to the conditions. So why can't we incorporate that kind of mentality, if you will, or attitude, specifically, let's say, towards our economy that nature takes? I mean, do we want a fast-growing economy, or do we want one that's going to last?
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that the book does that's so powerful is it helps you to ask better questions so you can get better answers. And let me give you a specific example regarding exactly what you're talking about. The United States just did a big study to look at the future of healthcare spending, which has been going up, 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 as you know, as we all know. And they're assuming that healthcare costs rising is a future fact. They think that's a fact. You know what? It's not. That's an assumption they're making a mistake on. Mm-hmm. For example, what was healthcare reform so far, really? It's really healthcare payment reform. It's not giving you a better knee or a better experience in the hospital. So instead of looking at how do we pay for it and you can't stop it from getting more expensive, what the book it talks about is how to use, for example, why don't we use some of the new technologies out there to bring increasing transparency so that you can see, hey, you know what, that aspirin costs $300 in the hospital, maybe I'm not going to do that. Or you can redefine purchasing, logistics, and supply chain within hospitals, lowering costs by billions of dollars and actually decreasing the cost of healthcare. You see, we're making assumptions about the future, thinking that they're facts, and you can change them. Let me give you one more quick example. The rising obesity. We've got a 15-year trend of we're all getting heavier, rising obesity. And there was just a study done to see how many obese people will be in the year 2025. And by the way, there were a lot of them. And they think that you can't change that, but actually you can. For example, I've got a company I've worked with several years ago. They gave all of their employees Fitbits, and they have weekly and monthly competition with prizes. And you know what they're doing? They're lowering, getting off of cholesterol drugs, lowering their weight. They're getting healthier. They have less sick days. In other words, we may not be able to change obesity in the planet, but we can surely change it in our organization. See, that's not something that has to happen. So the point I'm making is hard trends you can't change. We're going to be putting more in the cloud. There's going to be more virtualization. After 5G wireless, we'll have 6G, and the 78 million baby boomers are not going to get younger. You know what? They're going to get older, guaranteed. They're not going to start getting younger. So we have all of these certainties. The key is, what are the opportunities they represent? And one last comment on economists. Economists use cyclical change to predict the future. They look at past cycles and project them forward. And that used to be good, but today economists are increasingly wrong. And the reason they're increasingly wrong is there's another kind of change. It isn't cyclical. It is linear slash exponential. It's one way, and it's growing at an exponential rate. For example, once you get a smartphone, you're not going back to a dumb phone. That's not a cycle. That's one way. Mm-hmm. And once people in China park their bicycle and get a car, they're not going back to the bike. Mm-hmm. That's one way. And when you see these one-way linear slash exponential changes, these hard trends, you start to see that there are problems we could pre-solve, and by the way, opportunities we could all benefit from.
And opportunities are what we're all looking for. It's what's talked about a great deal. You also talk about, you know, you mentioned also, you know, shaping the future, transforming the culture. A lot of people are upset with a lot of the institutions that we have on the globe. You could, whether you want to talk economic, political, religious, educational, et cetera, et cetera. And there are a lot of people who feel that we need to tear these institutions down and build new ones that are better and more equitable for all peoples. I loved what one of my guests said some time ago. He said, no, that is the wrong way to do it. He says, what you do, and this kind of goes to what you're talking about, transforming the culture. You leave the current institutions right where they are, and you build the new one that makes the old ones obsolete.
Yes, and even another angle on that I think you'll like, and that is whenever you tell people that we need to change the culture, what you're really saying is you got a crummy culture. You're fixing the blame. And fixing the blame tends to make people hunker down and become your enemy. Mm-hmm. So what I do is we change that. What I don't want to do is change the culture. You know what I want to do? I want to elevate the culture to increasing relevancy based on the direction the future is going. Because to elevate a culture, it does not have blame. To change the culture does. When I first started working with the Joint Chiefs a number of years ago as an advisor at the Pentagon, and I was sharing the hard trend, soft trend, my methodologies, one of them said, you know, we got to change the culture. And my response was, I don't think the Marines are going to like that. but to elevate the Marines to increasing relevancy in a world of transformational change, nobody's going to fight you on that. So you see, it's kind of like making sure we pick our words wisely and don't get people to hunker down with them. So I would like all of our organizations, and by the way, most of them, when they think they're looking at the future, they're really... It's kind of like there's a reason your windshield is larger than your rearview mirror. Most of them are looking at the rearview mirror when they think they're looking ahead. And I want us to be using the windshield to look ahead. And what we'll see is amazing opportunities where we can transform our existing culture and organizations to serve us all better rather than fixing the blame and just saying they all got to be torn down, because there's going to be a lot of people fighting that. Why create enemies? Let's get them all working on our side to create a better tomorrow for you and for me and for everyone.
A house divided against itself will not stand, and that's what you do when you create enemies. And so I couldn't agree with you more. I'm talking with Daniel Barris. He is one of the world's leading forecasters. He's a business strategist and innovative expert. And basically, over the past 30-some-odd years, he has established a worldwide reputation. And this book, I think, adds to that reputation of really trying to assist. I'm very curious, as we're going to go to break here in just a moment, but before we do, I'm curious as to the receptivity of some of our oldest and still running, still functioning businesses, organizations, etc., and their receptivity to this concept of yours, anticipatory organization.
Well, thanks so much for asking me that. This is a great question. And, you know, most people that write books, authors, they put the book out and then they develop systems around it. What I did was I actually developed a leadership learning system that is an award winner several years ago, and it's being used by both old organizations as well as new ones to reinvent themselves. And it's been so successful, I decided to write a book about it. So actually, the book is already based on proven strategies and successes with organizations, even governments, that are doing amazing things. And so the book is not a let's see if it works and will people like it, but rather, hey, it's already working. It's already doing amazing things. I just needed it to be in book form. And again, that's why I'm giving it to people. I want you to not be having a barrier of, well, I got to buy a book. Hey, go to theaobook.com, and hey, I'll give it to you because I believe in it that much.
And we'll be linked to that well as well. We're talking again with Daniel Barris, and I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We ask you to stay right where you are because there's a whole lot more coming.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, along with Daniel Barris. We're talking about the anticipatory organization. Turn disruption and change into opportunity and advantage. There is a new, and I say new, it's only about 10 years old from what I have been shared with me. And it's these new facilities, these new communal workplaces where you have a multiplicity of different companies working in the same building. And it can be one person, an entrepreneur, 2, 10, could be 20, just depends upon what you're doing. And what they do, and apparently this has been going on in Europe for 8 or 10 years or so, and the first one here in the States was in San Francisco. We have them here in Santa Barbara, for example. It's called Impact Hub. It's just one. There are other names as well. And I actually took a tour of one of these places. And they have space down in the basement where you can go and you can record podcasts if you want, if that's part of what you're doing. But the real interesting aspect of it, and I'm thinking that this ties into your concepts here, the 25 steps, is that you have all of these different businesses doing their particular thing, product or service. And the guy that runs that facility, he basically communicates with everyone and finds out what they're in need of. And then he starts to kind of bring these, you know, business A and business J together, saying, hey, A needs this from you, J, and J needs this from you, A. Here, why don't you guys get together and talk about this? And it generates some new synergy, some new innovation and concepts of creating whatever it is that they're trying to create. Again, product or service and what have you. Seems to me, I mean, that's just, it's like one of the biggest principles that Greg Braden has talked about on this program in years gone by is the comparison between competition and cooperation. And they've done studies, and cooperation wins out every single time. And that, to me, is what these kinds of workspaces are about. This is not about businesses competing against each other. This is about businesses working together to make their individual businesses better, as well as the workspace, the workplace, their communities better. And in turn, maybe it is going to transform the culture. Your thoughts?
Well, thanks again. That's another great insight. And I like those as well. In the book, what I talk about is something that relates to this perfectly. And that is, we say we're communicating when in reality we're just informing, because informing is one way and it's static. Communicating is two-way and dynamic. We say we're collaborating when in reality we're just cooperating. And cooperating, of course, is about protecting and defending your piece of the economic pie, is where collaboration is about how do we work together to create a bigger pie for all. And that's what that's about. And even in the book, I also talk about, we say we're transforming a product or service or an organization, when in reality, we're just changing it. And today, with the growth, with exponential change, continuing to drive change faster, thanks to technology, if all we're doing is changing something, we're actually falling behind. We need to be transforming it. But you have to know the differences. So what I do is try to help us see, wait a minute, if you really know how to collaborate instead of just cooperate, if you really know how to truly communicate and use the new tools to communicate, wow, you can do amazing things. And I think in those kind of things, you have to foster collaboration and communication if you want to get results. One more thing, I'll just tie into what you were saying, and that is, again, having started six companies that did very well very quickly, what I did was I didn't compete, because competition is way too difficult. I don't want to imitate. What I want to do is innovate. And what I would do, like when I developed my anticipatory organization learning system a couple of years ago, is I looked at the best in class online learning systems so that I knew what not to do. Why would I want to do that? They're already doing that. What I did instead was look at then what are the hard trends shaping the future so I can see where online learning is doing, and why don't I do the next iteration of that now, which I did, and I think that's why I got a Product of the Year award shortly after it came out. So what I'm doing is agreeing. I don't like competition. I think it's too difficult, and the more you look at your competition, the more you act like them, and the more you find yourself competing with them. So I'd like us to differentiate ourselves, tap into our uniqueness, use the extraordinary opportunities that are right there in front of you by being not just reactionary. And by the way, agility is reacting fast to change that has already happened. I don't want you to just be agile. Let's face it, the people that came up with the multi-billion dollar idea of Uber or the Airbnb, or let's say, you know, they didn't use agility. What they used was anticipatory techniques that I'm sharing right now. That's how you can do leaps ahead with low risk.
Yeah.
Because if it can be done, it will be done. And if you don't do it, someone else will. Wouldn't you like to know what could be done? That's why I wrote the book.
Yeah. I think one of the other questions to add to that, and again, not using Uber as that example, I think those questions are very, very appropriate. But I actually threw another set of questions in there. And this maybe deals more with our scientific and biological innovations that can get a little dicey sometimes. Just because we can, does that mean we should?
A really good question. I like you. I like your questions. So it's not the technology, it's how we use it. You can use the same technology to cure a person's cancer, and you can use the same thing to give them cancer. It's not the tool, it's how you use it. Hey, I know people that can pick up a cell phone, make a phone call, and make $1 million. I know people that can pick up a cell phone, make a phone call, and lose $1 million. The difference isn't the phone. It's what you're doing on the phone. So what I would like us all to do is to use technology to create a more connected world, a more human world, a more enlightened world, a better world for all. And I worry that we're just hoping that will happen. And you see, hope isn't a strategy. So the reason I wrote the book is I want us to all be empowered with the tools personally, whether you're just a mom or a dad, whether you're unemployed, whether you're a student, or whether you're someone that's running a Fortune 10 company. I want you to have the tools to create and shape a better tomorrow for all, because the tools are there and they will be used. I want them used in a good way. So let's do that.
Yeah. I guess case in point, I read an article just recently that they are actually considering the possibility of using some DNA that they found in the ground somewhere to grow a T-Rex. And I'm just sitting here thinking, do you really think that's a good idea? I mean, I'm thinking, of course, Jurassic Park kind of thing, and it could happen. And again, I go back to, just because we can, does that mean we should? You know?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, somewhere in the world, somebody's going to play with that kind of stuff. And that's where we have to make sure that we're getting a new view, a global view, on the kind of future that we want to have. That's where you'll start to see the globalization of regulations. Because right now there is a technology called CRISPR, which is allowing you to do amazing things with gene splicing and gene editing, which can be used to cure cancers, but it can also be used to create some pretty horrific future for us if we aren't careful.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we have to have governments around the world, and we're talking now Chinese, India, U.S., and others, to start looking at, let's look at these game-changing tools that are out there and make sure that we're creating a better future for them for all of us, rather than creating some kind of future that maybe we wouldn't really like to have.
Exactly, exactly. Now, you have, again, this is dealing with 25 proven strategies to achieve innovation and transform results. And I'm curious as to why 25? Can these not be codified down into, like with Stephen Covey's, the 7 habits of highly effective people, or the 3 steps to this, or the 8? 25 seems like an awful lot. Does that mean that we may not necessarily use all 25, but we find the ones that work for us in our particular situation?
Yes. Well, in reality, you'll find some that you gravitate to and use. And in the book, there are 4, not 7, actually less than that. There are 4 main, I call them sections.
Mm-hmm.
Each one has some chapters, and each one of those have some principles or strategies that you can use. The 4, to make it easy, which is even better than Covey's 7, is number 1, and that is know what's next. And that's so that you can transform how you plan personally and professionally. It shows you how to separate the hard trends from the soft trends and so on. So that's number 1. Number 2 of the 4 is develop opportunities. And that's how to transform how you innovate. And that's how you can use those. Now you know where the future is going, now that you know those hard trends, how you can see what the game-changing opportunities are for you, regardless of whether you're an individual or an organization. The 3rd one is called shape the future. And see, I want us actively shaping a positive future than passively receiving it, because then it may not be positive. And that's where you can transform culture. And that's where you are elevating planning based on your future view and accelerating results. And the last one is called accelerate success. And that's where you're learning how to problem skip and do things like that. So the 25 are part of those 4 main areas that I'm giving you. Again, not 7, it's 4. And frankly, what will happen is you'll resonate with certain ones. They will be the best ones for you to use. And, you know, you and I have been talking in this about something that I think, let me share one of them with you that I think would really resonate with our listeners, mm-hmm. because it kind of ties together what we've been talking about. And that's called future view, because it has to do with culture and change. How you, how your kids, how we all view the future, to a great extent, shapes how we act in the present. Right now, there are people that are buying Apple stock and people that are selling Apple stock because of their future view of Apple. Right now, there are kids that are thinking of going to college and others are thinking of going to drugs because of their future view. How you view the future shapes how you act. And by the way, how you act will shape your future. In other words, your future view will determine the future you. And the reason I wrote this book is I believe our future view is not elevated to their proper level. We're going to undershoot, because there's so much opportunity to create a better future for all right there. It's like a mountain. It's as solid as a mountain, but it's fogged in. And by the way, the reason we can't see the mountain, the fog, is the news. And let's face it, bad news sells, good news doesn't sell. And if there's no bad news, I'll give you the anniversary of bad news. but the reality is there is a mountain of opportunity for us all to create the jobs that will give us meaning in our lives, to create a better future if we just blow away the fog and start looking at what are those opportunities. That's why I wrote the book. Actually, that's why I'm giving the book away right now as a special, as the launch, because I know it works. This is not theory. It's based on systems that even the old traditional companies are doing. Matter of fact, I've had libraries. Hey, who would think a library has got a future? They're using these principles to reinvent what a library is for a community. And it's amazing. So again, I put it into book form for everyone.
You know, that's interesting that you talk about that, because I can sit here and I use this analogy. I have all of these incredible tools that I have gathered over the 35, 40 years that I've been in this business and doing the things that I've been doing. And I keep asking myself, in spite of the fact that I love where I am right now, but it's like, when am I going to get to that next level that's really going to, you know, that can elevate me and with the work I'm doing and helping people like you to get the word out on your concepts and your ideas and your paradigms? And I have this toolbox that is just overflowing with tools. I know how to use the tools. I just don't know how to utilize the tools in such a way to achieve that elevation. Is that a struggle that most people seem to have?
Well, absolutely. And again, that is, I've got answers to that in the book. And let me just put it to you this way. Why didn't a taxi driver think of Uber? Why didn't Marriott think of Airbnb? And, of course, the answer is they were really busy doing what they always do. And I think we can busy ourselves today right out of business if we aren't careful. So rather than just be busy day after day after day, I'd like us to, and now I'm going to give you everyone a strategy that they can try, whether you read the book or not. Here's something you can use. Take 1 hour a week. That's doable. And don't put out fires and crisis manage. Instead, be an opportunity manager of your life and of your future and of your organization. In that hour, ask yourself, what am I certain about? What can I see? What are the new opportunities for me going forward right now? Use some of the tools I give you in the book and take action on just one thing. Pick one thing and make it happen. And you'll be able to elevate what you're doing. Because, you know, I was speaking at giving a commencement speech in the spring at graduation time. And one of the things that I shared was think big about your future and then realize you just thought small. Mm. Because there's actually a bigger big right now. And most of us aren't seeing it because we're too busy and we don't have the lens. We don't know where or how to see it. And we've got so many tools. Like you said, you're loaded with tools, and that's part of the problem. There's too many. How do you get it down to the right tool to use to get the right focus? Because, you know, big lists never get done, as you and I both well know. Mm-hmm. Could do's and should do's, forget those. I would like one must do. Try an hour a week. Use some of the things that I talk about in this book, and I think you'll find the must do that will allow you to indeed elevate and accelerate your success.
Well, technology-driven change is accelerating, and as you said earlier, at an exponential rate, but moving fast in the wrong direction will only get you in trouble fast. Boy, I can attest to that, even if you're driving your car and you're going the wrong way. What was that? What's that old saying about, you know, we're moving really fast, but we're going the wrong way, something like that. I forget what exactly that is. And I think that we're starting to realize that. I want to ask you real quickly here before we run out of time about an element that we discuss on this radio program quite often. Now, you said that, you know, hope is not a part of this equation, and I understand that. It's a nice sentiment, if you will. And again, I say that in the context of our conversation here. But what about our intuition? You use the analogy earlier about, gee, well, if I'd only invested in, you know, I knew I should have done this or I knew I should have done that, but you didn't. What about using our intuition in these strategies to basically transform ourselves and our surroundings and where we are and elevate ourselves and the people around us?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, this book is book number 7 for me. My last one was called Flash Foresight, which dealt with that as well as this new one. And I'm happy to say it was a New York Times, Wall Street Journal bestseller, as I hope this one will be. And one of the reasons I think it was so powerful is because it showed that we have an instinct about the future. We kind of know, like I said, how many times have you said, I knew I should have done that. I should have bought this. I should have sold that. I should have done this. I should have done that. But why didn't we? And the answer is we didn't know if we could trust our intuition. We didn't know if it was valid. We didn't know if we should bet the farm on that. And the reason I wrote this new book is by learning how to separate the wheat from the chaff, the future facts from the assumptions, all of a sudden you can start using your intuition and knowing, hey, you know what? I can believe in that intuitive insight that I've got because it's tied to a future fact. And you'll have the confidence then to make the bold move and to move forward. So I think what we were missing with our intuitive insights in the past was a litmus test, a way to test that intuition to say, will it fly or am I sticking my neck out? And again, future facts, by learning how to see those, which I teach in this book, will help you to then have confidence and know which one of your intuitive insights are the right ones to take action on.
Well, I know that I've had experiences throughout my life, as I'm sure you have, where I have gotten this feeling, this prompting, and I just kept going the way I was going, and the prompting got stronger and stronger, and finally I just couldn't ignore it. And I literally, speaking of going in the wrong direction fast, I literally had to turn around, go back a half mile, and then follow the directions of the prompting from there, got back on track after following the guidance. Nothing happened. I didn't quite understand why I was being prompted to do this, but I did it. Maybe it was just a test saying, are you serious? You're going to listen, but you're not going to follow? Or are you going to follow? Or did I avoid an accident? Maybe I came across someone I would not have if I hadn't gone this way. We just don't know sometimes, but it is really important to do that. And to that end is one of the reasons why I decided to go ahead and to do this program. I'm curious about your background very quickly here in terms of not just the businesses, but even before that. What about your growing up and being interested and or curious about these kinds of concepts? Certainly, you know, I don't know where your mind was at 5, 10, or 15 years of age, but obviously there must have been things that were happening along the way that sort of gave you an indication, or at least as you look back, hindsight being what it is, yeah, those things that I did here, yeah, kind of set me up for this and this, and now I'm here.
Well, that's a great question, and I think there's an insight here, and that is that I think that all of us listening to this, you and all of us, we have multiple talents, but a talent can only take you so far. And by the way, there are other people with similar talents, but we also have a unique gift. We all do. And if you don't think you have one, that's why you haven't discovered it. You haven't looked for it. But when you discover your gift and you get the talents to support the gift, then you can soar without flapping your wings a lot. And I think the two most important moments in a person's life are the first one, the day you're born, and the second one, the day you find out why you were born. And look, I'm very lucky, Richard. When I was young, I found out why I was put on the planet. I was put on the planet to teach. I just have this ability. I've given thousands of keynote speeches around the world. I've written 7 books. I've written thousands of articles. I just was given this gift. And I'm sharing. So instead of just saying, here's some trends, good luck, That doesn't work for me. What I want to do is empower readers. I want to empower listeners. I want to empower people and thank you for helping me to reach people today on this call to help them to realize, you know what, you can do, you are more than you thought.
Yeah.
And your intuition and your inner voice is powerful. And there are, most of the time, you should be trusting it. And again, the book can help you to get some further guidance in finding your gift and listening to that voice and taking action. Because, you know, there are times, and, you know, it reminded me of something, and that is, if you do what you've always done, remember this, mm-hmm. if you do what you've always done, you'll get what you've always had. But today, with exponential change, if you do what you've always done, you'll get less of what you've always had. We need to be doing some new things. And they say you can't teach an old dog a new trick, but the good news for those of us that are a little older is we aren't dogs. You know what? We can continually learn new things or not.
Exactly.
You have a choice. Yeah. We all.
And I've adopted a philosophy over the years that has basically said that I am not interested in my own success directly. I want to help you to be successful, and in turn, I will be successful. But it won't happen unless I'm there to assist you. And so that's part of the reason why we do this. The other is to share these new concepts and ideas. Before I let you go, I want to thank you so much, Daniel Barris, author of The Anticipatory Organization, for joining us and sharing these ideas and the concepts. And I will let our listeners know that if you go to theao.com, T-H-E-A-O.
Wait. No, oh. It's got to be theao book.
Book. I beg your pardon. Then
that's
we will.
All right.
TheAOBook.com, TheAOBook.com. Go there, and you can get a free copy of Daniel's book, and we encourage you to do so. You can also, to find out more, you can go to AnticipatoryOrganization.com and get more information as well. And first of all, before I let you go, if you ever find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
I would love to do that. I get up there every now and then, and I will be happy to do that.
That'd be
Thank
great.
You.
And before we wrap up, I have three final questions for you. These are sort of, some people would say, rapid fire. You've probably addressed them in some fashion earlier in the program, but I'm going to ask you the questions directly just the same. First of all, who is Daniel Barris?
Well, Daniel Barris is a person that knows why he's on the planet, who wants to help other people shape a better future for themselves and for others.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Well, what I want to achieve is for us to have a more connected, a more humane, a more enlightened future. And by my speaking and my writing and the work that I do, I'm trying to empower others to do that because I can't do it myself. So that's why I want us all able to do that.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
I think it is, as I kind of mentioned before, it's to teach people to think bigger about themselves and to elevate their future view so that in reality, they'll end up with a better future.
The Anticipatory Organization, turn disruption and change into opportunity and advantage. You can discover 25 proven strategies to accelerate innovation and transform results. Daniel Barris, again, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
It was my pleasure.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.